This week on the Special Ed Strategist.
Primitive reflexes are automatic instinctual movements that we are all born with to really keep us alive in the first year, year and a half of life.
And on top of that, they start to create a personality. So then the kiddo who has that fear of getting up in front of the class, he goes, oh, I'm just shy. This is just who I am. And what we're trying to help people understand is that's not how you are. Even the high school girls, like you would think that high school, mainstream high school girls, right? Like, what? You want me to crawl like a baby? And then you explain why. And I'm like, you have anxiety? They're like, yes, coach every day. And I'm like, well, try these movements. And then they start doing, they're like, coach, I'm not afraid of the dentist anymore.
That's also the cool piece about this is that a lot of these things are just totally intertwined. And so you might come to us and say, hey, you know what? My kid's having a little bit of a speech delay. Let's get them creeping. And then you're going to see, whoa, wait, I didn't even notice, but they were always running into things and now they're super coordinated, right?
So that's one of the biggest things that I always want parents to know is like, you're never going to get it right. No one makes it out unscathed. And we're all here as humans having this human experience, but these tools will give you an ability to have a freedom in life, in a sense of being able to say, okay, I know what's going on here. I know what I can do about it versus always outsourcing to somebody else.
Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com. Hello, and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast. Today, we're diving into the fascinating world of brain development and behavior with two incredible experts from In the Cortex. We're going to meet Danny and Paloma. They are pioneers in the field of neurodevelopment and brain reorganization, and they're on a mission to help kids unlock their potential by addressing the hidden influences of retained primitive reflexes. So get your paper, get your coffee, and get comfortable because we have a lot to talk about. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you, Danny and Paloma, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're so excited.
Yes, you bet. All right. Before we dive in, if you could just give us a brief little background about kind of who you guys are and a little bit about In the Cortex.
Sure. So I'm Danny. I am one of the founders of In the Cortex. I have been in the world of brain reorganization for about 15 years now. I have two small kids, a five-year-old and an eight-year-old. So I'm in the thick of all the parenting stuff as well. And yeah, we're just excited to share more about how this can apply to daily life.
Yeah. And I'm Paloma. I'm the other half of the In the Cortex team. I entered this world. I had a business and background. I really didn't know anything about the brain or anything. And then I saw the amazing changes in my brother, who was a kid that grew up with a lot of, you know, learning disabilities and socialization challenges, lots of behavior challenges and difficulties. And he did this method when he was about 17. And I saw that and I was like, whoa, this is really cool. And so I kind of dropped everything in the business, you know, world that I had, a company and everything. And I decided to be Danny's intern. We met through other people that work in the same, you know, in the same area. And it was awesome. And I was her intern for about like 3 years, I think. And then we parted ways and then we just came back and decided to start In the Cortex. I did go get my master's in neurological rehabilitation and I have another master's in neurodevelopmental disorders.
What a great story. I love to ask my guests before we get started, what is something that's like a little known fact or hobby that you guys do that has nothing to do with In the Cortex?
I make everything about In the Cortex. This is actually something that's really hot in my world is that I've been the head varsity field hockey coach at the high school down the street. And I came in with the idea of like, I'm going to weave brain work into this. And the girls have been so receptive. So that is something that I truly love because I was a Division I athlete in college. I played field hockey. So then they found out about it. And then all of a sudden I'm the coach and I've been loving it. So
perfect.
For me, honestly, I'm a hobby person. Okay. I will always find something to like fill my evenings. So puzzles were it for a long time. Crochet. I have like seasons, but now TikTok brought me into the world of cozy coloring. So now I'm obsessed with coloring. I got these like really cool markers. And so I'll just put on a podcast or some music and do this. And it is so calming. I love it.
That's one thing is Paloma and I are exact opposites on probably everything in life. That's probably why we're such a good team. We are just, yeah, so far apart in those worlds. But we also find so much connection in everything else and especially brain work.
Of course.
I would love to. That's crocheting. Learning to crochet is on my list. I don't know when it's going to happen, but
it's so easy. Honestly, YouTube, there's so much on there. You can easily learn to do it. I promise.
I feel like it's just a good like outlet. Your hands are busy. Really, your mind can just kind of do what it needs to do.
Exactly.
All of those things. All right. So let's talk about primitive reflexes. So it may be a new concept for some of our listeners. So can you just briefly explain what that term means and how they are developed in kiddos and why it's so important?
Yes. Primitive reflexes are automatic instinctual movements that we are all born with to really keep us alive in the first year, year and a half of life before we're able to go ask for help, right? Go get mom and understand that something's wrong. So if you think about it, when a baby is doing, you know, it starts crying or they get scared or something happens, what they're going to do, what they're doing is really signaling to their caregiver, hey, there's something over here. Come help me. They don't understand what's going on yet. They're still figuring stuff out, right? But that's basically why they're there, is to ensure our survival in that really, really critical time where we're developing our primitive brain in order to be able to start using our higher functions and start using our cortex. So the primitive reflexes are there from the time we are in the uterus till about a year to a year and a half, depending on each person. We don't like to be black and white with timing because we know, one, it stresses parents out, and that's not what we want. And two, every brain is different and these things are changing all the time. So some people will take a little bit longer with those reflexes. But basically what we want is for the reflexes to be on for a certain amount of time, do their job, help the baby develop that part of the central nervous system, right? And it's usually, it'll depend. Some of them have to do with our emotional regulation. Some of them have to do more with motor control, or, you know, there's a lot of different things, of course, that the reflexes are there to help with. But the point is that once they do their job enough, theoretically, they're going to start to lie dormant. And so that basically starts to pave the way for the higher centers of the brain to start developing. That's the cortex, where we have logic and learning and sense of humor and language and all of those higher functions, right? And so it's kind of like a little bit of a hierarchy, right? We have the ones that are in the uterus and the ones in the first month, the second month, third month, et cetera. And they start to build on each other. And by the time we're about a year and a half old, we start to talk, we start to be able to interact and engage a little bit more. And theoretically, that's when we're starting to operate from just the logical brain. And the primitive brain is only there in case we encounter a life or death situation. So we go from operating fully from the primitive brain in that first part of life to operating fully from the logical brain. This is the theory, okay? This is the way it should be, quote unquote, right? What happens is a lot of us just don't move enough in that first year of life, or some babies experience trauma. There can be so many things that interrupt that development, that movement that's necessary for these reflexes to understand how to evolve and to understand, okay, time to shut down, right? Time to shut off and just lie there. And so that's where we can see them stay on a little bit longer than is ideal. And so what that means is, in a moment of you having to just do your life and live in the cortex and the logical brain and go to school and have friends and listen to your parents, blah, 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 the primitive brain doesn't understand that. The primitive brain thinks that it still has to do its job to help you survive. So it's going to start taking over and putting you into survival mode in situations that are not necessarily survival mode. Typical example is a kid is sitting in class, looking at their notes, whatever, and the teacher says, okay, Jimmy, time to come up to the board and write the answer to this thing. And the kid's like, deer in highlights. Oh no, I don't want to do it. I'm so scared. And you know, your logical brain knows, hey, it's not a big deal. You're just going to go write something on the board. But your primitive brain is taking over because it doesn't know that it's not needed anymore, right? And so it's taking over and making your entire brain, nervous system, body think that you're in a life or death situation, think that you're in fight or flight. And so that's where we start to see a lot of behaviors come up, right? This is a kid that's going to become very shy, very avoidant, or it can be a kid that goes in the opposite, right? That would be a flight. It could be somebody who is actually super aggressive and wants to, you know, just be on top of everybody and just fighting all the time because they feel this aggression in them. They feel like they have to fight all the time, right? And this is, of course, just one tiny example. There's so much to do with the primitive reflexes that we could talk about this for like literally 10 hours probably. But That's the main thing, is that if they're not integrated, they're going to start interrupting your daily life. And so that is true whether you're 3 years old or you're 35 years old or you're 90 years old, which is the age of our oldest client.
And on top of that, they start to create a personality. So then the kiddo who has that fear of getting up in front of the class, he goes, oh, I'm just shy. This is just who I am. And what we're trying to help people understand is that's not how you are, because the real you at home is a completely different person, right? Where you're safe and you don't feel like you have to compensate. But in school, you're perceived as maybe not being smart. And then you create all these beliefs about yourself. And then those play out in real life. Then you won't do well in certain things because you've created a limited view on how you are in the world.
So when we talk about kiddos, right, and sometimes at school, we hear that, oh, they're doing fine at school, and then they come home and fall apart, so to say. So it sounds like it's the opposite of that, right? That they're kind of not able to keep it together in an environment that they don't, quote unquote, feel safe. But then at home, if they feel safe, then they're more kind of at their baseline. Is that right?
Well, it depends, because it depends. At school, they're compensating. So if I don't have all my reflexes integrated, that means my cortex has to pick up the slack. So now my cortex is doing double the work. It's having to stay in my chair and process what the teacher is telling me. So by the time they get home, they're exhausted, they're out of gas, and then they just let it all out, because now they're like, okay, this is a safe space to just really like let it go. Mom and dad are gonna whatever take care of me. But then we do see, like, once that piece is done and that part has now repaired in a sense, then we start to see like, oh, Jimmy, who was so shy in class, he's actually not shy in front of his family. He's like the loudest one at the table. But why isn't he that same person in the classroom? So that's why it depends on what's going on.
And it'll depend on the person's brain naturally, because and some kids, but this can be kind of a blessing in disguise, because some kids have so little organization in their brain that they're not able to compensate. They'll get to school and they're like, this is me. Get ready, sister, you know? And so the teachers are like, whoa. And that's sometimes better for the kid, in terms of the teachers are going to notice something's going on and they're going to get a little bit more support earlier on than somebody who's really good at compensating. That was me. I was really good at compensating my whole life. I got such good grades. I was like star student. All the teachers loved me, but I had such a disorganized brain. I didn't even know. And so all of this stuff started bubbling up in this like angry, weird thing that I would like, you know, compensate in other ways. And I didn't really notice I had that until I actually discovered brain reorganization and started reorganizing my brain at 24 years old. And I was like, oh my gosh, this has been my whole life, right? So it is, you know, really sometimes better to be able to see it sooner, because you can just help sooner.
Totally. Boys tend to be more overt with it, like Paloma's saying, and girls tend to be more of the compensators. Like, I was a compensator too. And then at 24, when I read the list of a disorganized brain, I was like, I have every single one of those markers. What? And then that's what I'm saying, is I used to think there was something wrong with me. Why can't I do this? Why is it so hard for this? I was so shy. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, but that's not actually what I was. My brain was just perceiving every situation as a threat. And so then once you can put those parts of the brain where they're supposed to go, then you see a situation like, oh, someone just asked me to put my shoes on. They didn't threaten my life. They said, just put your shoes on. Let's go outside. But as a kid, it was like the end of the world, because tying shoes, putting them on, that takes a lot of brain power, right? And so that's where we're just trying to help parents understand that they're not trying to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. It's just how their brain's wired.
For sure. I always say that, like, kids don't wake up and say, I'm going to be a jerk today. Like,
exactly.
There's always something, right? But yeah. I'm thinking kind of from a special education lens, and even from a parent perspective, if this is my little baby, I guess from a parent's perspective, this is my little baby, maybe it's my first kiddo, I don't have experience with kiddos, how am I going to pick up on that? And then conversely, in terms of a teacher, an educator, how are we going to pick up on that to then say, okay, do I need to refer you somewhere? You know, kind of what would be that lookout?
I think that's where our page on Instagram has really been making some big progress, is that we're trying to highlight all the behaviors that you just think, oh, this is just the way they are. And we're trying to say, no, actually, that's not a sign of someone who's just trying to be a jerk every day, their brain just can't do X, Y, and Z. And I always tell parents, it's like if I give you an analogy of like, can you just bend your nose in half, Wendy? Like, don't use your hands, just bend your nose in half. Like, and it depends on what your profile is. Like, if you're the overachiever, you're going to start trying to bend your nose in half. But essentially, you can't do it, right? You just don't have the wiring in place to do what I'm asking you to do. And then I'm like, Wendy, why are you being so rude? I'm asking you to do something. And you're like, but I can't do it. And that's how these kids feel. So we're trying to help parents see that when the kids start rocking in their chairs, they're paying better attention now, because now their vestibular system is activated. They're listening. If they're walking around a room, let them walk around the room while you're talking, because now they're getting the information in. If you tell them to stare at you and make eye contact, forget it. Nothing's going in, right? So this is where we're trying to just like scream from the rooftops that kids aren't trying to be this way. Adults aren't trying to be this way. There's an easier way to live. And that's where these movements are so powerful. They seem simple, but they're not easy to do.
Yeah. As you do it, you start to notice the difference. No. And we have a list of like signs of a disorganized brain. And it's so many things, from like the most common things we have are like issues with just learning challenges, like dyslexia, dysgraphia, you know, people that just avoid reading and writing completely, or that just have a really hard time with one subject, with math or with history or something like that. Those are people that have a lot of anxiety, because being in fight or flight all the time, of course, it's going to give you constant and persistent anxiety, right? So those are things you can look out for in kiddos. Kiddos, like Danny was saying, that are avoiding eye contact, that's super common in special education settings. And we have, you know, I used to work in ABA, and there were all these protocols and like ways of getting the kids to look you in the eye. And then when you look me in the eye for 5 seconds, and you get a token or whatever. And now, you know, looking at it from a brain perspective, it's so challenging. It's so threatening to force somebody to look you in the eye. If you think about it, I mean, we are animals, right? Think about animals in the wild. What's the first thing they tell you? If you see a bear, if you see, you know, somebody in the woods, do not look at them in the eye. It's really intense, right? And so if your brain's not prepared for that, then that's why you're always avoiding it, because just looking at somebody directly can turn on your entire fight or flight mode, right? And it puts you also in that reactive mode. Kids who are always putting their head down, for example, on the desk, that could mean that they have another retained reflex, or that they have their eyes aren't teaming, so they have to use one more than the other, so they naturally compensate and put their head to one side, right? Again, like Danny said, all the wiggly, jiggly kids who like just will not sit still. That's their brain. That's the spinal gallant reflex, which helps with the posture, right? I mean, there's just so much. But honestly, what we usually say is, if you see that a kiddo is having a hard time with things that you think maybe they should, quote unquote, not be, check out their reflexes before anything else, because that truly is the way to help the brain be as efficient as it's meant to be. The brain is an amazing organ. I mean, we know this, right? It's the most elegant, efficient, just crazy thing that is designed to develop in a certain way. And what we're doing nowadays, we're just skipping those milestones, and we're not putting enough attention on the movement, where before, you know, 500 years ago, there was nothing else for a baby to do than to crawl on the floor, right? There was no iPad for the baby to stare at, right? So they were just falling and eating, you know, probably wood and bark from the floor. I don't know what they were doing, but, you know, like, they were just living life. And so that's kind of what we're always coming back to, is first of all, it's never too late. And second of all, let's just do what's natural and instinctive to us. And once we do that, we give the brain the foundation it needs to be actually truly efficient, and for your brain to operate the way it's meant to constantly mostly be operating from the logical brain. And then if you do have a survival situation, if you're walking down the street and a car is coming at you really fast, that's when you want the survival brain. Not when the teacher tells you to come up to the board, not when your mom tells you to put on your shoes, right?
Can we get a little more under the covers? You brought up the eye contact.
Yeah.
And you hear a lot about that, right? In terms of having kids do it, don't have kids do it. Can we, from that brain lens, talk more about eye contact, what it means, what it doesn't mean, just a little bit deeper?
Yeah. Our take on eye contact is, honestly, well, here's the thing. When we ask parents to, because we used to just focus on kids when we had challenges come up, parents would find us and they're like, okay, here, can you help my kid? And so we're like, sure, we did that for a long time, until we hit like a point about 8 years ago where we're like, we're not making any progress unless the parent joins. Because what was happening was a parent couldn't understand why their child still couldn't do X, Y, and Z, and why they were still demanding. And they were so hyper fixated on something like eye contact, because for them, it brought up so much in their own life of like, oh, if this person doesn't give eye contact, they're rude, and they've created a whole story around it, right? So from our approach now is we have the parents start the program first, because we have yet to meet a completely regulated parent who has, you know, a dysregulated child or a regulated, you know, vice versa. There's no such thing. Like, a parent can't guide a child unless they're regulated. That's, I mean, and they can guide, but from like a really healthy space, right? So once we started having parents go through the process first, they started to uncover a lot of their beliefs and like what was coming up for them when their child did a certain behavior, because there's really a lot to it. So the kids are here to help us grow and uncover our stuff. And so from that's one piece of it, is really going into that emotional connection. What's coming up for the parent? Why are they activated? Why are they triggered about the eye contact? Why is that such a big deal for them? I was just working with a family on this with something similar. And they're like, well, I don't know. They just have to be an adult in society who can do eye contact. And I was like, but why? And they're like, I don't think I've ever dove into that before. I'm like, you need to really dig deep into why that activates you so much. Like, why does your child's behavior take you there? And as soon as you uncover that part, you realize, oh my gosh, I have so much shame and fear and blah, blah, blah. And then they start to project all these things that are going to happen in their kid's future. So that's a really big piece. We always address it in the cortex. The second part is, if we're asking our kids to do these movements because we're saying their brain is disorganized, we can't then say, can you also do this at the same time that we know is a brain function? So we're going to give them the grace of getting there. And so that means do these brain functions, and we're going to leave that behavior alone for now until your brain gets the ability to have eye teaming happen naturally. And eye teaming is really cool, because when we have people get on their hands and knees and into the crawling position, we can literally see what's going on with your eyes, because the way your hands are lined up shows us how your eyes are working with the brain. So the first part of the brain we look at is the pons that develops from 0 to 5 months of life. That's literally a baby on their belly moving across the floor. We call it creeping. Babies aren't doing that enough today. We're putting them in apparatuses. We're carrying them so much. They're always neurologically upside down on their backs and swings. So they're not getting that first part of development. And Paloma talked a lot about the primitive reflexes. So the primitive reflexes are happening simultaneously, the baby's on their belly. So there's so much happening together that we have to allow that process to unfold naturally, but we're interrupting it. That's the first piece. So when babies are on their bellies, that's when the eyes start working with the brain, and they start to work on tracking, like that automatic function of being able to track across your midline effortlessly. Once we've done enough of that, then they move on to crawling from about 6 to 12 months of life. And then that's where we start to see where the eyes are converging or they're not converging. So every time we have a kiddo or an adult get on the floor, we look at their hand placement. Any person who puts their hands out to the side when they're on their hands and knees, we already know their eyes don't converge. We already know that you do not like reading, you don't like writing. And they're like, how do you know this? There's always so much evidence in the movement and that's how we can tell what's going on with the brain. So we watch how you move. So that's the first piece. So then we tell parents, leave alone the eye contact. They literally can't do it. Just like I asked you to bend your nose in half, they can't do the eye contact yet. So leave it alone for now. Go work on why it bothers you so much. Let them have the time to crawl. And then all of a sudden the hands will come in line. Because like Paloma said, the brain's so amazing. It's constantly searching for the most efficient way to do whatever we're asking it to do. As soon as it does more crawling, the hands will line up. And then all of a sudden eye contact is now natural. It's not forced. Because you can... Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. As you were bringing this up, I was thinking of myself, and I have my hand. I don't know. Yeah, I probably can't see them. Of course, people are listening. I was like, where'd my hands go? I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And there's more. Yeah. And then there's like, if the hands are cupped and they don't want to touch the floor all the way, then we know, oh, there's a lot of tactile sensitivities. These are the people who don't like tags in their shirt or certain waistbands or certain itchy sweaters, because their brain feels it very intensely. And then over time, the hands will come flat. And then these kids don't have the same sensory challenges.
And when it comes to eye contact, just like with anything else, in our opinion, is when you're trying to go from the top down, it's going to be really hard. And so that's kind of what I was talking about earlier with the ABA mentality that I used to work in. It was like just training the cortex to continue to compensate for stuff that it's already compensating for, right? So you're just doing the same thing. You're going top down, top down, top down from something that is disorganized, right? And so the foundation is like, whoa, wobbly. And so the brain is working extra, extra hard to do this thing that, again, like Jenny said, why is it that important, first of all? But okay, so we're constantly teaching it to compensate. So what's going to happen is that kid's going to get much more frustrated. That kid's going to get much more exhausted. Other things are going to stop being as easy for them because now they're spending so much attention on this one skill that one of, you know, the parents or teachers or whoever is fixated on, right? And we're not saying eye contact's not important. Of course, it's part of natural social interactions in humans, but it's also about, if we're going from the top down, we're not giving any sort of support to the way it's naturally meant to do. So we always go bottom up. That's why we always do with every single one of our members. It's the same exact movements because that's what all of us need as humans, right? It's not going to be some other programs will focus just on one or two reflexes, for example, that are retained. And what we've learned is sometimes when you do that, when you only focus on one piece, even when you're talking about the primitive brain, then that can like throw off a bunch of other ones because like we said, it's a hierarchy, right? So you have to really get into that mindset of maybe it's not going to happen immediately. I'm going to have to be patient, right? And also, you know, giving the kids the grace and giving the kids reasons too. And Danny and I are big about this is I'm not going to force you to make eye contact without explaining to you why, right? Like kids are so smart. Even if they're 6 months old, they understand everything. They understand so much more than we do. And we don't give kids enough credit. And, you know, just the fact that some of them can't really communicate or can't express what they understand doesn't mean that they don't understand it, even if it's just an energetic piece, right? So also we always believe in, if you are working on a very specific skill with your kiddos, always tell them why they're working for it. Because if not, they're not really going to have a lot of like intrinsic motivation. Let's be honest.
100%.
When we talk about primitive reflexes as in plural, and you had mentioned the hierarchy, what is the hierarchy and what are those reflexes?
Okay. There are a lot. Danny's going to show you the book. We have one beautiful, wonderful book.
It's on our website. So if you go to our resources, I don't know if you can see it because I blurred my background. No, you can't. Okay. So it's called Reflexes, Learning, and Behavior, A Window into the Child's Mind by Sally Goddard. She's one of the main pioneers that really started dedicating her whole life to understanding primitive reflexes. And that's where we highly encourage people to go and dive more into it. There's a lot of trainings that are around all of that. So that's where you can learn literally, when does it emerge? When does it integrate? Like the asymmetrical tonic neck reflex, it's emerging 18 weeks in utero. And at birth, it's fully present. And then at about 6 months of life, it should be inhibited and integrated. And so that will give you the guideline for all the reflexes. And that's what we share with you in our program. We break down every reflex. When should it come on? When should it integrate? And here are all the signs that you could be experiencing that this reflex is not integrated. So that's what we like to do, is really help people understand the little tiny details. Like if you walk into a room and you're like, why did I just walk in here? And then you turn around to walk out. We're like, okay, that's your ATNR reflex on. Because there's like a wall between right and left sides of the brain. And the brain's so amazing. It finds another way across. But in that time, it took such a delayed time by the time you walked out to figure out what it was. And this is why we always tell parents too, there's such a processing lag for kids. And so we build in, just like what Paloma said, explain the why, but we teach you how to explain the why in a way that the brain can hear it. Because otherwise, parents get stuck on their high horse and they're just like, you know, yelling at kids all these things. And the kids are like, I'm not with you. So then you have to deliver it in a certain way, so you're not triggering the reflexes to actually hear it and then give them time to process. So that's the book. Highly recommend that one. And then we also talked about creeping and crawling. That's from Glenn Doman and Carl Delicato from the Institutes of Human Potential. And that is a really cool, just focusing on the creeping and the crawling aspect of how that's really connected to the brain. So we've been trained in that too. And then we bring in Brain Gym. And then we also, which helps with the subconscious beliefs and why are parents so triggered by their kids' behaviors and why do kids have certain things going on. And so that's how we've brought it all together. And that's what our program does, is break everything down. So it's digestible and super easy to follow.
That's incredible. So are there any specific situations or behaviors in school or home that kind of indicate hey, it's a red flag, it's time to seek an evaluation?
The most obvious is focus. I think that's probably the focus, is that's what every teacher and parent would talk about first. Because focus can be, and we always say, well, what are they focusing? Focusing on what, right? Because their brain isn't able to process out what's not important and stay focused on what is important. Because the kiddos who don't have a developed midbrain, which is the crawling, they take everything in. So the sound of a kid tapping a pencil three seats away, or the person tapping their foot, or the teacher walking back and forth, the light in the room, the stuff on the walls, their brain is being inundated with information. And so the kid is focusing, but not to what is important, at what the teacher wants them to focus on, right? So I would always say focus is the big one. And I'm trying to think of my son too, because I would say focus is always a challenge sometimes with him.
Focus also is kind of like a big thing in the classroom, right? Like the teachers want you to be able to focus. I would say also emotional regulation is a really big one nowadays. And transitions, being able to go from one thing to the next. I would say those are the top three things that we see in our in-school program, because that's also the stuff that the teachers really, you know, get challenged with. If you have one kid that's like having a huge meltdown and throwing chairs and hitting the other kids, you can't teach. You have to go put out that fire, right? And a lot of teachers, I'm sure you've experienced this, tell us that they're constantly putting out fires all day long. They never actually get into the learning, which is why they got into this profession, which is why, you know, they're trying to help shape the minds of the future, but they're firefighters all day long. And so they're exhausted. The kids are exhausted. Everybody's dysregulated in the classroom. And it just kind of becomes very, very chaotic. And I know you've lived through, I'm sure you've lived through that. I know I have.
Well, yeah. And the kiddos that are throwing the chairs, not only are they creating such a disruption, but now it's not safe for the other kids. So then all their reflexes are on, because they're like, this is a survival thing. A chair's coming at me. Exactly. And we have worked with kiddos that were going from throwing chairs in the classroom to now regulated and asking to do the brain work. That's my favorite part, is when people, kiddos especially, they are asking. So we set up a space, like a little cortex corner in the classrooms for our in-school program. And then they just willingly go and do their movements. And they know, they're like, this helps me feel calm. I love the way it makes me feel. And we explain to them, and they're learning about their vestibular system, their proprioceptive system. They're learning about the cortex. They're learning about the pons, the midbrain, the reflexes. And then they go, and there's something I can do about it. And that's the best part. And kids get it. And so schools are seeing such a shift, and they're like, we're actually learning. We're actually making tons of progress. And I think that's my favorite part about being in the schools.
Well, and the beauty part about what you just said and what you have been saying is having that dialogue with the individual so they understand the why, so then they can then properly advocate for themselves, which is, I think, is incredibly empowering.
Yes.
Because then they're able to say, okay, this is how I feel. This is why this is happening. And this is why I can do this to make it better. And then they're able to have conversations with the caregivers or the educators that are around them. And I think that really becomes a beautiful platform, right? For everybody to kind of grow and move forward and do what they need to do.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also they start to gain just a different sense of empathy for other kids, because, you know, and Danny, your kids do this all the time, where they'll see somebody who's having a hard time and maybe having a little bit of a meltdown, or, you know, having just a rough time. And they'll say, oh, you know what? Look, sounds like they probably need to creep a little bit, you know, and it's so much cooler, instead of being like, oh, that kid's mean, that kid's a bully, that kid's a, you know, whatever, name calling, label putting humans that we are. Instead of thinking that way, they're just like, oh, that person just needs a little bit of more movement. I do it all the time. My mom does it all the time, right? Everybody around me does it. So what's wrong with it? And so that's another big piece of what we do. And the reason we also want families to do it together is to remove the stigma, because let's be honest, adults also need to work on our brains just as much as kids do, if not sometimes more. So nothing wrong with that.
Oh, so true. My kids totally see it in other kids. And I mean, my kids for the longest time didn't know that other people didn't do this. Like, we'd go to Home Depot, and my son, who's like three, he's like, oh, what a creeping space that is. And he'd just get down in the aisle and creep. And I was like, the cleanest place to do it. But I was always very encouraging of it. I was like, when you got to do it, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah.
But now he like encourages his friends to do it with him. And he just knows, like, and I'm even the high school girls, like, you would think that high school, mainstream high school girls, right? Like, what? You want me to crawl like a baby? And then you explain why. And I'm like, you have anxiety? They're like, yes, coach every day. And I'm like, well, try these movements. And then they start doing, they're like, coach, I'm not afraid of the dentist anymore. And they're like, whoa. And then the teachers start seeing what's going on with them. That's a really big piece. Teachers go, what are you doing? What just happened? And so I think there's definitely a shift, because we've been talking about this for 15 years and even more. The stuff was out in like the 50s where people started talking about it. And recently in the past 2 years is when it started to actually pick up traction on social media about people talking about nervous system regulation. And we're all talking about it, but we're not actually like, there's not enough tools to like actually change, because most people are saying meditate, take a deep breath and, you know, tapping. And those are all great. But if your brain is stuck in survival, it's really hard to override that with just a deep breath. And that's where we come in, where we just say, if you do these movements, everything falls into place. And then you can go take a deep breath when you start to feel a little bit of it come on. Because that's where I'd say we are now, is like we're regulated majority of the time. And then if I have too many stressors hit me, I'm like, oh, I got to do my brain work. And then it'll immediately shift within minutes. And I think that's what I love about this so much. It's so tangible. You can see it in the movements. We helped explain what that means. And then as you do the movements more, they become more efficient and they become easier. And then at the same time, your movement pattern is shifting, your life is shifting. So it's always connected. And people start to see that. They're like, oh my gosh, I get it now. So if I have my kiddo go take a crawling lap and he's crawling and his feet are up in the air, he's not ready to go sit still in a chair. His brain just doesn't have that in place right now. So I'm not going to go have him, you know, force him to go do an hour-long math project. Instead, we're going to be outside learning math and doing something a little bit more that's stimulating all senses. So that's what I love about what we share here, is that it's so easy to bring into classrooms, to bring into the home, to bring into every aspect of your life. And it doesn't have to take over your life. We teach you how to weave it in. So it's really a doable process. I mean, I do it in 5 minutes every morning.
Can you walk us through some of those most effective exercises or activities and kind of explain how they're reorganizing the brain?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the main movements that we do, we work, like we said, we kind of try to go in chronological order with the reflexes. So we were talking earlier about having your name called in class and kind of freezing, right? Or a lot of people will have that situation too, if they're in a big group of people and suddenly the spotlight's on them, they just kind of freeze up. They have to give a speech or something. It's that deer in headlights kind of situation. So that is a primitive reflex called the fear paralysis reflex. And that reflex actually is there. So when the baby's in the womb still, basically the fetus knows that if the mom is in a true life or death situation, if the mom is going into that survival mode, the fetus knows to freeze and stop placing demands on the mother's system so she can use her entire system to survive. I know, it's so cool. Yeah. and it's, the integration is very simple. So you're basically, I'll walk you through it in case you're just listening. So you're going to put your hands into fists. You're going to cross one hand over your chest, kind of like reaching over to your opposite shoulder, and the other one on top. So we kind of made an X on our chest, and you're starting with your hands right at your shoulder, and you're going to bring them down to the middle of your chest. Then you're going to switch the other hand over, Danny's showing you there, and bring it up all the way back into the shoulders. That counts as one repetition. So we're going to go down. We want to do it super slow, switch hands, and then come all the way back up. If you're somebody who right now is starting to feel like some tingles, or you're feeling like a little bit of like a weird feeling in your chest, or you're just kind of like, this feels strange, you probably have this reflex on. And so just do this. We usually do 10 per day. That's what we start with in our program. If you want to do more, go for it. It is super relaxing. I know a lot of people do this right before they go to bed because it helps you like just really, really calm down. And so just by doing this movement, which is something that the fetus literally in the stomach naturally knows how to do when they're in the womb, we are giving the brain the stimulus it needs to now integrate this reflex. And so that part of our primitive brain understands, okay, I don't need to be on all the time. And you'll start to notice little by little that it's easier to go talk to new people, to, you know, stand up in a big group and do that kind of stuff, to react. If you see somebody, you know, sometimes when we always give the example of like, you see a kid falling into a pool, and instead of reacting, you're just like, freeze up, right? Or you just see something happen and you're like, why didn't I do anything? That's also that reflex. So you start to see that you're able to actually react or do whatever you're meant to do in that moment instead of freezing up and feeling like totally, you know, attacked basically. So that's one. Yeah.
And you can feel when these reflexes come back on because we said they lie dormant and they wait for when that survival situation kicks in. So a lot of times we have worked with veterans who've come back to the country and they're in that PTSD state, right? They've actually gone through some serious trauma and they're in that space. These reflexes will help reset and calibrate their brain, like integrating them. And so that's where it applies to every single aspect of life. We always say, like, if you're a human, you have a brain, this program is for you because every brain needs this. It's not just the kiddos that are in the school. It's everywhere we go out in public. We see it on social media now where people are like losing their minds. And it's like, and I shouldn't say losing their minds, they're in their pawns and a survival response, and people are just videoing them. And they are just like, wow, look at that person. They're out of control. But their brain is interpreting it as a true threat. And doing that reflex that we just did, that integrate, we call it making an X, it can bring up emotions. So a lot of times we trap and store emotions from coming out. And these movements will help you to feel them and help you to process through it so it doesn't stay stuck in your system too. So you might have felt like, ooh, that makes me want to feel like a little emotional right now. And it might take a little bit of time, but your brain will work it through and then you won't have those big emotional reactions anymore. But then you'll know if I just go do something really crazy, maybe you just got a new job, you moved, you got in a car accident or something big happened in your life, that reflex might come back on and it's designed to protect you. So that's why we also say we're a lifestyle program, because just like everyone who does yoga or prays or, you know, any aspect, eating healthy, working out, you can't just do it for a little bit of time and expect a lifetime of results, right? So it's the same thing about our brains. We're constantly being hit with stressors and we need to keep ourselves regulated. And this is what these tools will do. So that's why we always tell our members, once you sign up, you have access for life, because we want you to keep coming back. And we've got members who've been around for 4 years and they're just like, yeah, I'll turn on, all of a sudden I'll just notice that I need to do some brain work and we'll put our videos on and we'll get it back. And I'm like, okay, I'm reset. I'm good to go.
How do the repetitive movements create those changes in the brain that are going to lead to that better behavior, better learning outcomes?
It will depend on each movement, really. But for example, when you're, let's say, creeping, right? When you're creeping on the floor and you're going, you're basically on your belly and you're going from point A to point B. We don't give too much detail about how to move because we want the brain to figure that out on its own, right? If you think about a baby who just started doing tummy time, they're just kind of like lying there being like, whoa, what's going on? And their head falls and then they pick it back up. You know, it's very cute. And then one day they start moving and you're like, cool. And then 2 months later, you see that same baby and they're like zooming across the floor. You're like, whoa, how did you get there? The parent didn't have to go in and help them move their arms and legs and do this, right? So that's why we don't give a lot of detail. But basically, as we're doing that, we're stimulating the nervous system, because that's really the way that the brain learns, if you think about it, is through the connection to the body. That's the entire point of having, you know, the brain and the entire spine connect to all the different parts of our body. And when we're babies, that's all we have. We think it's cute when babies are like punching their arms out into the air and they just have these like weird movements that they do. And that's why they're weird, is because the baby doesn't know how to open and close their own hand yet, right? Everything is a reflex. Every movement babies do, especially in those first months when they're just starting to understand what's going on, that's all reflexive. So it's basically kind of like the brain is sending like these electrical impulses over and over and over and fine tuning that connection. So that's what we're doing when we are doing all these different exercises, is continuing to give that specific neurological path the stimulus that it needs in order to truly become developed. And so that's why it's repetitive. That's why we want to do 10 reps, 20 reps, whatever, however many reps a day. It's not like a baby does that, right? They just naturally know how to do it. But that's why we want to give it that continuous input, is it so that the brain continues to get that basically those neurons firing together so that they can wire together. And that's when we start to see the changes in the behavior. So for example, with the creeping, has a lot to do with our emotional regulation. So the pons is the center of so many of our automatic functions. It has to do with our digestion, with breathing, with regulating our circadian rhythm, which is so key and so important for a lot of things, right? And our emotional responses. So it communicates with the amygdala, which is a part of the brain that basically is there. It's like a sensor for danger, right? And so when, if you think about it, again, a baby, right? A baby who's 3, 4, 5 months old, anything that happens that they don't like or that they're scared of, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to start screaming and crying, right? Or they're going to start fussing and be like, no, I don't like this. It's a very emotional direct response because that's all that they have. And so as we continue to grow, we talked about this before, we have more access to the higher functions of the brain and the logical brain, which can say, this is something that I'm going to react to emotionally. This, it's not that big of a deal, right? Theoretically. If our pons is not fully developed, then that baby brain is taking over. And so it's going back into that, I'm going to react. I'm going to get really angry, or I'm going to get really sad, or I'm going to start screaming, blah, blah. And that's where we see even those videos on TikTok, Danny, of people that are just like having these really hard moments in public, right? And we know that that's not what's expected in society. As we continue to creep, then we start to notice, oh my gosh, normally I would have gotten so upset at that comment that that person made, but it just rolled off my back. That's so interesting. Oh, normally, you know, I would have gotten so annoyed when that thing didn't, you know, work with my car this morning, but I just, you know, dealt with it and it was fine. And so you just kind of start to be able to be more in your cortex. Ultimately, that's what we want. And that's why our company is called In the Cortex, is because as the primitive brain starts to understand basically its place, what it's supposed to do, then we are able to operate more logically. So we don't have that takeover of the primitive brain as much. And that's honestly, that's why the behavior shifts so much, is because you go from being in total reactive state all the time to being actually able to process things logically before you decide whether you're going to react or respond.
Yeah. And from a physiological standpoint, you're not shooting off tons of adrenaline anymore or the cortisol hormones, which lower your immune system. And they make it so, because there are kiddos, there's a correlation between people who are constantly getting sick and they're also very dysregulated because their body is being flooded with all these fight or flight hormones. And so we do see a shift in that too. So there's so much happening, not just like the behavioral standpoint. That's the obvious thing. And what people can really see is I have a pause. I can actually just, I just paused. I don't even know how I did it. I didn't have to think about it. It happens automatically. And that was totally me. I was the person that if you asked like, oh, do you want a salad for lunch? My first interpretation was like, did you just call me fat? Like, that was rude. Because you want me to eat a salad. And they're like, what? That makes absolutely, it's not what I was saying at all. And you're like, now I'm mad at you. And you're like, whoa. So there are people who create these stories, right? And it's the brain then just interpreting everything as the threat. But then once that threat, that amygdala comes on and goes, hey, wait, this isn't actually a survival threat. This one can get processed up here in the cortex. Okay, thanks. I'd love a salad. Thank you so much for thinking about me. That was so kind of you, you know? And it, like, people are like, oh, okay, she's changed. She's not so reactive anymore. And we see that happen all the time. Those people, that was me, by the way. I was very, because we look at your profile. We have an assessment that we love for people to take because you can answer these questions and then we can give you an idea of how your brain is wired and what part you're more likely to respond from. So I was more of what we would call like the Ponzi person, who would take comments and distort them. I had a lot of fears. I was very much in fight mode all the time, or then I'd go into flight and I was very shy. And then as I did these movements, that reactive part of me just went away. But then there's people who will take the assessment and they're more of the midbrain people who are very, you know, disorganized. They're always late. They have a hard time sticking to plans. They're seeking that dopamine, constantly needing new things. And what else can I consume? And they're the people who are always like, huh, what'd you say? What? And they need more time to process information. And so we help you understand like, where are you more acting from, right? And so then once you have a sense of like, oh, that's not my personality. I'm not just an aggressive, crazy maniac. I love this, because that was me. I was a hot mess express. And now that I'm like, oh, that's not actually who I am. And it's so liberating to actually get out of that state. And I love when moms finally have that aha of like, oh my gosh, all the things that I was so activated about my kiddo about was actually just me reflecting that back at them. And that is when you start to see some major changes. And that's where moms will always be like, oh, I have to do it first. Okay, sure. I'm sure it's not going to change me that much. And then they're all like, I don't even care if my kid does their brain work today. Like, I need to do it because I can't go back. I can't ever go back to that vibe I was before.
Are you saying pawn, P-A-W-N?
No. Oh.
P-O-N-S.
Got it. There you go. For folks that are wondering how that goes. And so with families, when they come to you, families sometimes have other services, right? Whether it's special education services, educational interventions, OT, speech. How does this complement the other therapies? And then also, how do you help? Sometimes families feel overwhelmed, right? Because it's like, oh, I have all these therapies we need to do. How do you help prioritize? I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing about what we do is, again, we're going from the bottom up. We're going from the root, the foundation of the brain. And I keep talking about the foundation. I just want to give everybody a visual, right? Imagine you have a house that you built on a wobbly foundation. The windows are going to break. The door is going to break. There's something wrong with the ceiling, blah, blah, blah. And you can spend your whole life in that house fixing the window, replacing the door, doing a thing with the ceiling, and then whatever, this other thing, and then that wall, blah, blah, blah. Or you can get to the foundation, organize it, make it really, really solid, and then that house is going to be fine, right? And then any other amazing, cool thing you want to do to that house to make it better, to make it more, you know, cooler, whatever you want, that's going to be awesome, right? Because that foundation is solid. So you can build an extra window. You can do whatever you want. That's what we do too. So we're giving the brain the neurological foundation it needs to efficiently process all of the other interventions. So we want to make it clear, we're not ever saying that there's anything wrong with any sort of therapy that's out there. We love all the other modalities. We've done them, right? We love OT. We love speech. We love all of these things because we've seen them work when the brain is prepared. So the way that our program interacts with that is really simple. You can do it at the same time. You can stop the other stuff and do this first. It's going to depend on each person. It's going to depend on what's going on in the IEP because you can't just stop all the services, right? But the cool thing about this is it's a maximum of 20 minutes per day and you start with 6 minutes. Super doable. And if you're a family that says, you know what, 6 minutes is too much, you're going to send us a text message and we're going to say, or an email, and we're going to say, oh, start with three, whatever. More than zero, anything that's more than zero, you're good, right? And you're giving your brain that solid foundation that one day you're going to say, whoa, I've seen these amazing changes now from the occupational therapy, from the, you know, whatever other therapies and modalities we were using, because now the brain is prepped to use it. And I know any therapists that are listening to this or teachers that are listening to this have been in a situation where they see the kiddos who go to one therapist, the other one, the other one, the other, blah, blah, blah. They're always in therapy, right? That was my brother. And either it didn't work ever, or it would work for like a month and then it would stop. He was back to ground zero. It was always like in and out, in and out. And then my mom was always constantly having to find the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. Until he did this, it was like everything, he was able to actually process the rest of them. So basically what we are is like a primer for them, right? To be able to efficiently receive anything else that you want to do and that might be helpful.
Are there any particular accommodations or strategies that you've seen work especially well with kiddos that we're describing here?
That's a great question. Yes, absolutely. There's so much that we can do. First, we always want the teachers to like go on our Instagram and watch some of the videos, right? And just understand or take the basics of brain reorganization as a program we have, just so they understand where it's coming from. And we ask that they remove the labeling because we say, oh, he's being so rude today. He's being so whatever. He's talking back. He's doing this. We always put a name on the behaviors. We want to remove that. And we want to be realistic with our expectations for the kiddos and set them up for success. So like Danny was saying, if this is a kiddo that has a really hard time sitting in their place, instead of just demanding it and making it the, you know, the bane of both of your existences, give them one of those little wobbly cushions so they can wobble and let them wobble while they're listening to you. It helps them listen more. Maybe some kids, we even just stand instead of sitting right at their desk. And it's so much easier because you're taking out that gravity component. They're much more solid on their feet than they are sitting, right? We can also help the kids do their tools in school. So if the teacher knows, oh, they're doing this program at home and the kid says, hey, I really need to do my making an X right now, then just the teacher just having space, honestly, holding space for the kiddos is the biggest thing that we always see. And honestly, we've only ever had teachers that are super open and super receptive to this. And they really love to support the kiddos doing this because they see the changes too.
Yeah. And another really good support. So, because what happens right now in school is the kiddos who need the wobbly cushion or the extra fidget things, if we don't put boundaries in place with it, then that then becomes a distraction and now we can't help them. And so that's why we love that when they're doing our program, they're able to stop making it such a scene. Like, you know, some kids can chew gum, but then the gum goes into their hair, the gum goes on the desk, and they're like, okay, well, that's not working. I think a lot of teachers experience that, right? They're like, yeah, I gave you the fidget, but now he's flinging it across the room. So what we do and what we really suggest is that you talk about it ahead of time. And this is such an important thing for all educators to know, is explain what you want them to do before you give it to them. So, and I know a lot of teachers do this, so they like pass out paper and then give instructions. Before you pass out the paper, talk about what's going to happen with that paper.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's going to get ripped and crumbled and blah, blah, blah. So we talk about the same thing with all those extra pieces. Like, hey, I'm going to give you this chair. Are you going to fall off of it? How are you going to use it? And you use it in a question form.
Questions always
keep you in the cortex. You cannot process a question when you're in survival mode. You have to bring that higher function on to process it. So that's a really big thing that we share with parents. I'm going to do a post on that tomorrow for parents. on like, how do you present information to the brain? And when you do that, then you see if I put a divider up to keep myself focused, it's going to actually help versus turning into another distraction.
As we've learned, a lot of our executive function, balance, all of that starts in the cerebellum. And then that has to mature to come forward. How does this all align?
That's exactly it. The all of these, call them the automatic functions, right? Like balancing and like all this stuff that we have to do without thinking of. Theoretically, that's all developing while we're doing these movements. So for example, balance, vestibular system, that's what that is. And the vestibular system starts, it's not that it develops, but it starts to tune itself, right? Again, a baby, when you first put them on, they start to sit down, they're like, whoa, and they're like falling all over the place, right? And they, even when they start walking, they're like, whoa, whoa. And it starts to fine tune little by little as we're doing these movements. And so that's why a lot of people come to us with a lot of vestibular challenges, car sickness, motion sickness in general. That has a lot to do with the pons specifically. That's when it's developing, or I would say fine tuning the vestibular. So a lot of that's also the cool piece about this, is that a lot of these things are just totally intertwined. And so you might come to us and say, hey, you know what? My kid's having a little bit of a speech delay. Let's get them creeping. And then you're going to see, whoa, wait, I didn't even notice, but they were always running into things and now they're super coordinated, right? And they were having these issues with like socializing and now they're able to be themselves with their friends. And like, it's just kind of like overarchingly goes everywhere. It's very cool.
As we wind down our conversation today, what did I not know enough about? What did I ask that I didn't know enough about?
I feel like my one thing that I have to share, because I know parents that are listening right now, they're like, oh, I can't believe I didn't know this. I messed up my kid. There's something. And they start to go into that space, right? Guilt, a lot of mom guilt. I knew about all this brain organization and development before I had kids. And my son, and when I was pregnant, everyone's like, oh, you're gonna have a superhuman baby. He's gonna be incredible because you know all this. So then I internalize that as like, I have to have a perfect child, right? Obviously, there's very subconscious thinking. So when my son was born, I had a home birth, everything natural, really followed like the most like brain healthy approach possible. And when he came ready to start crawling, he had a kickstand crawl. He literally had one foot down and one knee down. And I remember feeling, oh my gosh, what's wrong? Wait, why aren't you following the plan? Wait, you're supposed to be perfect. Why aren't you following the perfect plan? And that was my very first moment that I was like, okay, my kid, I obviously in the moment I was more mortified and like, this is terrible for business. But after I did a lot of emotional healing on it, I realized that's when my child has come to teach me so much. And the minute I stepped into thinking, okay, he's his own person. It's not a reflection of me as a parent. I mean, there's obviously a piece of that, but I can't control him. The only thing I can control is me. The only thing I can control is my response to him. And if I can be regulated, then that'll help him. But it took me a minute to get there. So I want parents to know that even if you knew about this, it still doesn't go according to the plan that you thought you had. It goes according to a plan that you need to have, right? There's a lesson in all of it. And that's a really big part of our program, is for parents to really learn to unpack their childhood, and that your kids are here to teach you. So the minute you're ready to step into them as being your teachers and learn from them is when incredible progress happens. Like, me and my kids have never been more connected. I wouldn't say the first few years were easy. When Paloma came and visited me 2 years ago, I wasn't regulated all the time. And that's where our program, we are so open and honest with our own struggles and journey and challenges. And we're really like showing up every day doing our brain work, because we're not above any of it. Like, we still have to work on ourselves. And I share from my own personal perspective, like with my son and what we've gone through and how his crawl didn't get the right time period of crawling. And I still see some of the behaviors, but now I know how to work through it. And now I know not to let that spiral me. And I can keep myself in a solid space to be that role model for my son. So that's one of the biggest things that I always want parents to know is, like, you're never going to get it right. No one makes it out unscathed. And we're all here as humans having this human experience. But these tools will give you an ability to have a freedom in life, in a sense of being able to say, okay, I know what's going on here. I know what I can do about it, versus always outsourcing to somebody else. So we're really big in having parents become that leader in the home that your kid desperately wants you to be.
Wow. That was really beautiful. I really liked how you framed all that, and to give grace for parents. And I always end with, if you had one tip for parents, what would it be and why, to put on a billboard? But I feel like you answered it.
Yes.
Right? I feel like you answered it. This is incredibly informative. We're going to put how people can reach you in the show notes. But if you'd like to share real quick at the end how folks can find you so they can learn more about this amazing work that you're doing, and so they can start supporting either their personal kiddos or the kiddos that they take care of, educationally speaking.
Yeah, you can always reach us at our website, which is inthecortex.com. And our Instagram is packed with information. So it's inthecortex_US. And we're, you know, it's just the two of us right now. We're super available. If you ever have questions, send us an email at hello@inthecortex.com, or send us a DM on Instagram, anything. We know that there's a lot to unpack here, and we're always here to answer anybody's questions. And as a special gift of our token of our appreciation for your listeners, we actually made a coupon code for anybody that wants to sign up. The coupon is just Wendy, and it's going to give you $27 off of your first payment of our program. So if you're interested, it's just Wendy. You'll put it in when you go to check out, and we hope to see you soon.
Sweet. I love that. And that's where I found you guys on Instagram. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's such great information here. I would love for them to be a guest, and here we are. So
yes,
thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Wendy.
You bet. Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddos' success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.